Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Dr. Nikki Noce. She is a medical doctor who has abandoned her Western training for a more alternative, holistic approach, and I'll tell you more about her in just a little bit. And I have a recipe to share with you, a great tempeh recipe. But before we get into that, I want to share with you some of the things going on in and around New York area, things that you might want to participate in, and also tell you some things going on in the news and things you can take action on. Tonight, Slow Food New York City is having their third annual fundraiser to support their Urban Harvest Program, which is an educational program that has reached over 1,500 school kids this year, and it's in 16 schools, and it also has a summer program, summer farm program in East New York. So tonight is their fundraiser. It's from 6 to 9. The party admission is $130, but then there's an after party, which is just $25, and all the proceeds will go to support this program. So if you're available tonight, it's on Lafayette Street, 399 Lafayette Street, between 6 and 9. You can find out more information on the Slow Food New York City website. June 7th is Citizen Lobby. Long Island is having their June meeting. There's two of them. One is at the Middle Country Public Library on June 7th. And then there's also one on June 11th in Queens, if you're more in Nassau and Western, or Nassau and Queens. There's one on June 11th at Panera Bread. So Citizens Climate Lobby is really working to help establish a way to reduce the carbon emissions into the environment with a cap and trade type of program. This week Obama came out with unveiling new rules on setting up some limits and trying to rein in the pollution that a lot of these coal plants produce, and it's called the Clean Power Plan. And you can read more about it on my website, but it's the plan is to cut carbon emissions by 25% by 2025 and by 30% by 2030. And it's definitely a really great start. It's so needed. But as you know, we also need to really invest more money in research and infrastructure to build solar power plants and wind energy. So that's, where we really have to go towards. But this is a great start, cutting the carbon emissions from these power plants. So you can read more about that. Also, a new report came out that the labels on meats really don't really say much. You really don't know where your meat's coming from and how it's being handled. Even if it says it's raised humanely, and sustainably, you don't really know whether or not that's being verified by anybody. So it's really good, if you shop at the farmer's market and you know where you're getting your meats and poultry from, that's really the best way to go. And there was also an interesting study recently on fast food's effect on patients. And they find, people that are, crave fast food and eat fast food, that sets up a whole pattern of wanting instant gratification and having very little patience to savor almost anything really well, whether it's a good musical piece or, a good meal and waiting for things, that it just sets up this pace of fast food. And, I think it's probably more than just fast food eating. Our whole society, starting from when kids are little with Sesame Street, it just bombards everybody with this fast-paced mentality. And fast food just, adds right to that and goes right in with it. So it's just some, more food for thought, something to think about when you're rushing for your meal. I know I cracked me up watching somebody wait for a baked potato to be baked in a microwave oven and getting really impatient because it was taking 5 minutes. And I come from the school of, being patient, waiting an hour, planning ahead, stick the baked potatoes in, and then you do everything else and you know, by the time you're finished with everything else, the baked potato's ready. So, you know, one thing that I really try to share with people in my passion for cooking is really just planning ahead and timing. You know, the idea is to have everything coming out at the same time. And if you plan for that, there's no need to rush. And if you are rushing, you don't have time for the baked potato, well, then you plan quinoa, which takes 15 minutes, or a quick rice noodle that can take a couple minutes. So you really have options. And when you're cooking, you know, keeping your pantry well-stocked is really always the best way to go. Anyway, going back to some of the things going on in the New York area, next week, June 11th, Dan Barber and Ira Glass will be at the 92nd Street Y talking about Beyond Farm to Table, a new food revolution. And he'll also be signing his new book, The Third Plate. So that's something to check out. And I'm also going to be starting my farm-to-table cooking classes again in July, waiting for my garden now that it's almost all in and growing, waiting for everything to come in, starting July 9th and then every other Wednesday throughout the summer and into the fall, I'll be giving evening cooking classes. I know the date might not be great for everybody. If people are interested in weekend cooking classes, if I hear from enough people, I'm certainly willing to schedule a few weekend cooking classes as well. But my farm-to-table classes really are just that. We'll go out into the garden, harvest the vegetables that are growing in season, and I will have designed a menu around the vegetables that we'll be harvesting. So you can find out more information about that on my website. And also, the Tin House Music at the Restoration Farm continues. It's the first Sunday of every month. There was one this past weekend, which was great. And the next one is July 6th. Again, that's at Restoration Farm. It's called the Tin House Music. And they have live music starting with open mic at 2 o'clock, and then the performers come on at 3. So it's a lot of fun, and it's also, you know, just more opportunity of building community. And it's a really great time. So the recipe I wanted to share with all of you is called Roasted Tempeh and Vegetable Medley. And this recipe, you know, makes use of the chives that I had in my garden, and I actually used up all my asparagus, but if you have asparagus, I'd add some asparagus to this recipe. It would be really great. So I start by roasting my tempeh in the oven. I used to always fry it. And, you know, in my desire of cutting back on oil, I've taken to roasting it. But I like tempeh when it's cooked really well, which means that it's golden brown on all sides. So when I used to saute it in the pan or fry it in the pan, I'd, you know, put it in the oil on one side, wait for it to be golden brown, and then have to manually turn each piece. Well, in the oven, it gets golden brown much easier without having to watch it so closely. So I turn my oven all the way up to, like, 450. I cut the tempeh into small cubes, and I actually cut the tempeh when I open a package. I cut it in half, and then I cut it horizontally so it's actually thinner, and then I cube it. Again, that way, you know, more of the surface area gets crispy, and that's how I like it better. So I cut them into cubes. I splash about 2 to 3 tablespoons of olive oil over the tempeh and toss it, and then lay it out onto the cookie sheet and bake that in the oven for 15 minutes or so. When I take it out, I'll splash it with some tamari, which will just, you know, give it a little bit of salt, and then just leave it on the side while I do everything else. So for this recipe, I also made a little mashed potato to go with it. So I had 8 medium-sized potatoes that I cut into quarters, 1/4 cup of organic coconut milk, and 2 tablespoons of chopped chives. And with that, I, you know, boiled the potatoes, then mashed them, add the coconut milk and the chives, and that's a little bit of a mashed potato side dish that went with this. If you want to make it like a shepherd's pie, you certainly can, you know, put the whole thing when you're finished into a casserole and put the mashed potatoes on top and bake it in the oven, and that's also a nice presentation. For the vegetable medley aspect, you want 1 onion sliced into crescent moons, 1 broccoli cut into flowerets, 3 carrots cut into bite-sized chunks, 2 celery stalks chopped, 1 1/2 cups of chives cut into 1-inch pieces, 2 turnips cut into small cubes, 4 cloves garlic minced, olive oil for sautéing, 2 tablespoons of tamari, a half a cup of good-tasting nutritional yeast. That's not brewer's yeast. It's actually good-tasting nutritional yeast. They're also called yeast flakes. 1 can of organic fire-roasted tomatoes, 1 teaspoon cumin, a half a teaspoon salt, a half a cup of water, and 1.5 tablespoons of chopped cilantro. So you cover the bottom of a wok with olive oil. Saute the onions until they're translucent. Then I add the carrots, the turnips, and the celery. And saute those some more and let them cook down for a bit. Then add the broccoli, the cumin, the garlic, and cook for about 5 more minutes until the broccoli starts getting soft. Then add the water, the nutritional yeast, the cooked tempeh you can add back in, and the tamari, and let that simmer for about 10 minutes. Add the chopped cilantro, and then serve it with the mashed potatoes on the side. And that's it. Really simple, easy, and quite delicious. Also, as you know, I love feedback. So after you make it, please feel free to send me comments or give me a call. Tell me what you thought. Tell me what you added. Like I said, you can certainly add asparagus or whatever seasonal vegetables you have, and that's really great. One other thing is that I didn't mention is a push to let Governor Cuomo know that we want him to lead a clean energy bill in 2014. So there's a petition on my website for that, and if you could all go to my website at IE Green and sign this petition, that would be really great. There's also a petition for a national conference call to ban fracking, and I'd really appreciate you signing both of those petitions. We all need to get involved. You know, last week I talked about the movie Fed Up that I saw. That was really great. And one of the things that came out of that movie was, again, just how much and how important it is for all of us to get involved in some aspect of one of the many issues that you are not happy with, whether it's fracking or GMOs or just access to good food, fair labor wages. The list goes on and on. There's so many different issues. But get involved in something and really share your passion with other people and try to bring other people on board so that we can really make an impact and stand up against all these corporations that have so much money behind them. The only hope we have is getting the numbers of people so massive that, as President Obama said, you know, make him do it, force him. Make it so big in this country that it's impossible for a president or governor to say no to the masses of people. So that's what we need to do. It's our only hope to stand up against it, these big corporations. Anyway, so now it's my pleasure to invite my guests on. This week I have Dr. Nikki Noce. She is a medical doctor who turned, kind of abandoned her allopathic ways and went towards a holistic approach. And she's now teaching yoga and is a lifestyle coach. And she transitioned to more holistic approach because her belief is that health comes from wellness in mind, body, and spirit. And so aside from wellness consulting and blogging about nutrition and wellness and other life topics, she works with groups and individuals both in New York and in L.A., empowering them to live healthy and happy lives through yoga, meditation, nutrition, and a positive mindset. And she's traveling the world, leading retreats, and she's actually working on her first book and a documentary series about alternative healing. Nikki, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. So first, I'd love you just to share with us a little bit of your journey. You know, what inspired you to want to go to medical school, and at what point did you become disillusioned with traditional medicine and decide to forge out on your own path?
So my love for medicine and the sciences was, you know, since the beginning of school. And I remember in fifth grade, I said I wanted to be a forensic pathologist. So I was always on that path. I was always on that path to medicine. And, You know, I actually wanted to be a dermatologist when I was in medical school. And then just after working in the hospital, and then I actually didn't match in dermatology because they had wanted more research, I just took a moment to step back and, you know, kind of reevaluate some things. And during medical school is when I started doing yoga. And I was traveling all during medical school, and I did medical missions in third world countries. And in undergrad is when I did my nutrition concentration. So kind of putting all the pieces together, I was just kind of disheartened and feeling like all this prescription writing I was doing and, you know, kind of discharging patients from the hospital without feeling like I had really helped to heal them. Noticing that there were some underlying issues going on that the prescriptions couldn't help, or even their short visits really weren't addressing. And it was actually a gradual shift from, you know, following this dream of mine, which was always to want to help people, and then realizing that, you know, growing up in New York City, that I only knew about Western medicine. I didn't know that other ways existed. And it wasn't until medical school and the traveling and then kind of having my own realization with yoga and meditation that I then decided to kind of change my life.
Uh-huh. And did you find in your travels that any of the other medical modalities, whether it was Chinese medicine or Ayurvedics or homeopathy or any of those other modalities, did they call out to you, or is what you're doing really more of a combination of your own experiences?
Well, initially, I just remember myself personally, I didn't really want to take all the medicines. Like, I always knew that it was like sleep and working out or just having a higher activity level, and what you ate was really what kept you healthy. And so it was like once you got sick, it seemed like there was only this one option. I did try acupuncture in medical school. They provided it for us in terms of, like, decreasing stress and improving fatigue. And, you know, I tried that, and, you know, I did find it to be relaxing, but I didn't really have enough experience. And though NYU is now open to more of alternative ways, when I was in medical school, it wasn't really something that we were learning about. So it was all very something that was naive to me. And it was when I went and did medical missions in third world countries that I noticed how people were living. And they were living close to the land. They were farming the land, you know, day in and day out. They had community. And they were eating very healthy. They didn't really have prescription medications. And at the same time, they weren't obese. They didn't have high blood pressure, really. And only those that were eating the junk food, you know, and, you know, they had the potato chips and they were overweight because they had access to those types of, you know, I want to say toxins. They were the ones that needed the help when we came for the medical missions. But the people that stayed close to the land really didn't have any problems at all. And they were, I remember this one 90-year-old woman, you know, she had probably the most wrinkles I've ever seen, but with all the sun, you know, exposure through the years, she was barefoot carrying a big barrel of corn on her back and just had the biggest smile on her face. And she was so in shape, and she was tilling land that was so steep. Like, I was having a hard time walking on this land with sneakers on. And right. So that's when I started noticing, like, maybe our way isn't necessarily the best. That was in Ecuador.
Uh-huh.
Or Honduras. Yeah, I think that one was in Ecuador, near the hills of the, yeah, that one was in Ecuador. So it was just amazing to see that. And I think that, and then, you know, and then when they kind of tell us what some of their own cures were for things, they talked about different teas and just saying that, you know, going there and then writing prescriptions for them and their blood pressures were slightly elevated, I almost felt like, are we doing some harm here?
Right.
And so when I had to start questioning, you know, the modalities that I was learning, it just was kind of like a wake-up call. And, right. Yeah, and it just was a gradual shift in my perception in terms of healing as well.
Uh-huh. What are some of the most common struggles you see with your clients now when in working in a more holistic way? What are some of the most common ailments and what is the most common resistance to the healing process?
So I currently mainly work with people who are on their, they want to stay as healthy as possible. So they have yet to cross over into, you know, actually having certain diseases. And so a lot is, you know, weight struggle. And at the same time, I notice that I'm attracting a clientele that wants to take that next step where, you know, they're already aware that, like, they shouldn't eat, you know, fast food and, you know, fried foods. But the thing that I'm noticing is a lot of them are just, they feel like they're being tricked by the marketing. You know, they think they're buying a really healthy product. And then they're just, they feel like they don't know what to do because they think they're buying healthy. And then, you know, we kind of go through reading food labels and kind of all the different labels that sugar can take on, you know, they're really feeling disheartened. Or, you know, and then little things about like understanding the best way to eat vegetables and, you know, how to cook them without losing all the nutrients. And so really people are trying to, you know, eat as healthy as possible, and they're actually just having a hard time because of the lack of education. You know, we learn about all, you know, history and all these things that, you know, are wonderful to learn about, but not necessarily applicable in our daily lives. And something like nutrition, which is a part of every single day, is not a part, a big part of the education system. And so it's really a problem when people are trying to, like, live really healthy lives.
Well, also there's, of course, the problem of mixed messages. You know, you hear that, you know, coconut oil is not healthy for years and years, and then all of a sudden it becomes healthy, and then everybody's using coconut oil. But when I was younger, I mean, coconut oil was something we avoided. It was told, we were told it was not, it was saturated fat, it was not healthy, and you should avoid it. You know, and even with raw vegetables, you know, raw vegetables are good to eat, and then some people say, well, you shouldn't have raw kale if you have a thyroid issue, and you know, there's so many different different little tidbits of information that people hear, and there's, you know, no one place to really put it all together,
right?
Because so many are different philosophies. I mean, you know, what's true for one person is not necessarily true for someone else,
right?
How do you address that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, and what came to mind was, like, salt, where people think, like, oh, salt is so bad for you. And then it's like, yeah, maybe the table iodized salt, but we, you know, we need salt in every single cell of our body. And so if we're not eating processed foods that are hidden with a ton of salt, you know, getting, you know, real salt or Himalayan pink salt or something, you know, our body actually really needs that.
Right.
And so, so in terms of addressing kind of all the different nuances, I kind of try, you know, I think that too much information is something that I know I've noticed that a lot of my clients don't do well with. And so I find that generalizing, you know, as long as people don't have major health issues, kind of generalizing and staying focused in terms of like what to eat and then what to avoid. And, you know, and then each session we kind of progress through and get a little more detailed as things come up, because I noticed that information overload is just so overwhelming that it's hard to even make one change when it's just there's too much to share.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I define with my clients, that it's best to start broad, and then, you know, you kind of refine and refine throughout the session.
Uh-huh. And how do you use yoga and meditation in your healing process?
So that actually ends up being a lot of, you know, a lot of times initially clients contact me to work in that way, and it's a really wonderful platform to get people connected with their bodies and understand where their next changes need to be made, because it's really like a self-realized process. And so it's interesting that I'll have clients that, you know, will feel like they get messages that, like, they need, you know, if they're, like, older women that are single, they'll feel like they need more sex in their life. So it's really interesting how it becomes a platform for understanding where they need work. And so just even working privately and then, you know, kind of teaching them to connect with their breath and keep their awareness in their body, and then noticing, you know, they'll notice. Like, I know that naturally, too, that I've had clients that I've worked with yoga, that they've just naturally started eating healthier with the practice. So it just kind of wakes us up in terms of what our bodies need.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the foods that you universally tell your clients to avoid?
So top three would be sugar, for sure. Just because, you know, I think there is this archaeologic study that even showed that the countries that ate sugar had, you know, holes in their bones. Like, it's so toxic to our body. And then this addiction to sugar happens as well. And so I'd say sugar is, you know, one of those 100%. And then also I've been more and more having clients stay away from gluten, especially when they're complaining about fatigue and all of these other issues. And it really does make a difference. And it's mainly just, you know, they've done, you know, crossbred and created all these new strains of grains that our bodies just don't really recognize. And even if you're not gluten intolerant, even if you don't have celiac per se, you can still have an intolerance that's not showing up in the form of a blood test or with an antibody development. And so that I've noticed does help. And then lastly, dairy, just because of what's going on with that whole, with the hormones and all of that, just dairy in general too is another one. Just, and mainly like milk products are the three that, you know, if clients really kind of want to see quick results, I find that those three they're able to see most quickly.
Uh-huh. Interesting. And so with gluten, you think the wheat is affecting more people than even those that really have a intolerance?
Yes. And I think they're doing more studies around this too, that it can cause, it's almost like an allergy because it is an antigen. And so our bodies aren't recognizing it. And so even though you're not developing this whole, like I mentioned, the whole antibody, which actually, you know, when people have celiac for a long time, it causes all like the villi on their intestines to decrease, which then decreases their absorption and then they become malnourished. And so aside from that, just it can cause fatigue, and it can also cause other triggers in terms of antigen, so maybe making allergies worse, for example. And so anytime people may feel like they kind of are allergic to things, or, you know, it's kind of like avoiding any trigger, because once inflammation is active in the body, it's likely to trigger in other areas as well. So anything mm-hmm. that can cause inflammation in the body, you want to avoid.
Right. Now, would you agree that inflammation is the cause of most of the chronic diseases people are dealing with, that the root cause is an inflammation of some sort?
Yes, I do think so, because then our body's in stress mode, and it's literally a cascade, and so you're tipping your body to produce all of these harmful hormones, you know, like cortisol and all of that, and then cortisol is linked to cancers, and cortisol is linked to increasing your weight, which then is increased to diabetes, and then even increased weight is linked to hypertension, and then you have inflammation of the vessels in the body, then you're going to get atherosclerosis or clogging of the arteries, so, and then a heart attack, and on and on and on. And so it literally is, and that's what we see, you know, in the medical field. When someone has one illness, they generally have multiple. It's very rare to see, like, a lot of isolated incidences. They do happen, of course, but generally when someone has a medical problem, they have multiple medical problems.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Now, I know you also like to work in group situations. I know you work individually, but you also work with groups. How do you work with groups with yoga and nutrition? And I know you said you also like to make it social and fun. Can you share with us how that works?
Yeah, so something I've noticed is the way I get clients often is through word of mouth and through friends. Like, you know, they just, you know, they're having such a great time with it that they tell friends, and then it becomes like, oh, why not do something all together? And it's been really beautiful to see, especially like young, you know, people who are just, you know, in their 20s and 30s and, you know, kind of getting themselves established career-wise are now thinking ahead. And it's really beautiful to see that. And, you know, a lot of times people gather together in social settings, like a let's go to dinner or have a barbecue. And what I've been having is a request for like a yoga and nutrition night. And so, you know, I kind of go over to, you know, within the buildings in New York City, there's like space, like, or a gym. And, you know, we'll do like a yoga class. And, you know, I've had like groups of like 12 and they're all friends. And then afterwards, it's like some healthy snacks and a discussion about some nutrition topic. And it's kind of like a question and answer. It's more of a discussion. And it's been really wonderful to kind of see people socializing in a healthy way. And so, and that's what, it's easier to create a healthy lifestyle when it's a part of your lifestyle and it's something social and fun and you have someone else to do it with. Because, you know, if you're going to the gym and you're going by yourself, it's not as fun as if you're going with a friend. And so, you know, and they even have done studies that people are work out harder, or they challenge themselves even more when they're in classes. And so this kind of allows for a platform to facilitate, you know, information around healthy lifestyle when you kind of get your friends involved. And so it's been like one of my favorite things to do because it really becomes a fun night.
Mm. And so how does it work? You rent out a space, or somebody invites you into their apartment, or...
So, yeah, so mainly it's been, like, I haven't really, you know, went and said, oh, I guess I can organize an event like that. That would probably be a great idea. But for the most part, it's they already have a space and they already have their friends and they just kind of invite me into their space to host an evening like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and at the same time, you know, I think that's a great idea, maybe scheduling something where I could rent a space and host an event like that as well for people who maybe don't have friends that are looking to get healthy, or maybe with their friends they don't really want to do something like that, but they're open to a group setting of kind of learning more about nutrition and yoga and healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. Let's take a couple-minute break. When we come back, I wanted to ask you about some cleanses and what you recommend for people, you know, starting the season, if you recommend cleanses and things like that. So everyone,
sure,
don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Dr. Nikki Noce, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Dr. Nikki Noce. She is a medical doctor turned holistic yoga instructor and lifestyle coach. And we're talking about healthy eating. Nikki, you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So before we took a break, I just touched on cleanses. I know lots of people talk about doing cleanses and trying to clean out their bodies. How do you feel about cleanses, and do you recommend them, and what types do you recommend?
So cleanses are not one of my specialties, but for the most part, I agree with some of them, and then others I don't. And so the type of cleanses that I don't agree with are the ones where people kind of want to shed some pounds quickly, and so, you know, a lot of times it ends up being, you know, certain types of juice cleanses, and they cut basically protein out of their diet. And then, you know, our bodies kind of go into survival mode, and we start breaking down all of the good tissue, like muscle, for example, which helps with our metabolism. And that's the that's the tissue that's hardest to build. It's the healthiest. And so, you know, these kind of quick cleanses to kind of shed a couple of pounds, you know, a lot of times you end up shedding some water weight, but then you break down your protein. And so those are kind of the cleanses that I don't recommend, which I feel like are very much the trend. However, a recent cleanse that I did by Andreas Moritz, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, on the liver gallbladder flush.
Yeah.
And so that was a pretty amazing cleanse that I did. It was actually my first one because I was always not so much in the school of cleansing. I do think that, just a quick side note, that there are really great cleanses to, like, for liver, for kidneys, and there's usually very specific instructions. I know, like, the Ayurvedic lineages have some, and, you know, there are some really great ones out there, and especially the more specific they are, I think, the better. And then this cleanse came into my field because a friend had done it, and then I kind of started reading about the theory, and I read the book, and, you know, I was definitely agreeing with what was being said. And so there's this
idea.
Is
that the master cleanse?
It's not the master cleanse. It's a liver gallbladder flush. So it's really geared at actually cleaning out the gallstones and the stones that are in our liver. And so, you know, we kind of go through these surgeries to get rid of gallstones when actually there's a cleanse that exists that actually, you know, you literally pass stones. Like, you will see stones in the toilet. And I thought it was just, like, so amazing because I knew how many people suffered from, you know, gallstone issues and GI upset. And, you know, here doctors were recommending, you know, even I was one of those doctors that was like, oh, you need to go to the GI doctor and get your gallbladder taken out. And in the end, there's actually a cleanse that ameliorates those issues.
What is it?
So it's actually not too hard of a cleanse to do. I do recommend reading the book because there's very specific step-by-step instructions, you know, in terms of timeline of when you have to drink certain things. And but for the most part, it involves, you know, if you mostly eat a plant-based diet, then that's fine too. And so you switch to plant, you know, essentially all, you take out any kind of animal fat. And you want to have your foods to be warm because this also helps to soften the gallstones. And you also drink some sort of natural malic acid juice or elixir. So it could be like apple cider vinegar and water or tart cherry juice. And you kind of sip on that for about 5 to 6 days while you're having this diet that's warm foods and all plant-based. And then on the day of the cleanse, you're actually opening up these channels with Epsom salt mixtures. And, you know, you're, at one point you're drinking, like, olive oil with grapefruit juice as a way to kind of extract. So basically you end up using the – so by not eating animal fats, you end up kind of storing up all your bile that you then later use to help flush out the stones, and the malic acid in the tart cherry juice or the apple cider vinegar helps to break up the stones so they pass easier. And so our liver is an organ that has a whole bunch of channels and vessels, and, you know, through eating and different toxins, like, we're exposed to, like, various metals through whether you were vaccinated as a child, in the food source, you know, anything. And, you know, even if you have fillings, you know, cavity fillings, you know, little by little, you know, if you haven't removed them from the 80s, you are slowly releasing that into your body. And so what happens is you create these stones, they get stuck in the liver. It's kind of like a protective mechanism that these stones get created. And so now our liver is all clogged up as well. And so we're maybe not metabolizing food as well. And any type of congestion in the body, and that's a big Eastern philosophy, you know, even with qi and qigong. And so if you have a tight hip, you know, that could be a source for some kind of ailment to form. And so there's this idea of just cleansing all of these stones out in order to provide maximum function of your liver, which is a really, really important organ in the body. And so, you know, I did feel very, you know, weak the night after, because it's kind of like an overnight thing. But I was amazed at how many stones were released, and it's kind of recommended to continue doing it until you have no more release of stones, and then you're, like, fully clean, and then you can do it, like, you know, once a year or once or twice a year. And so I've only done it once. I do feel like it would be a good idea to do it until, you know, all the stones come out. But even someone like myself, where I know I eat a healthy diet and I generally lead a healthy lifestyle, you know, just seeing that I we all have them. And
what's the name of the book?
It's called The Amazing Liver and Gallbladder Flush. And the author is Andreas Moritz. And so that's one, you know, anyone, especially if someone does have some kind of disease or sickness or they have something chronic going on, I feel like this kind of flush could be applicable to anyone. And it really allows it, because our liver is the organ that helps to detoxify. You know, the kidneys as well in some cases, but the liver is a major one. And so anytime we're sick, kind of releasing toxins from the bodies can from our bodies can only help.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to compare it to the Master Cleanse because I've done the Master Cleanse a whole bunch, and I love
and
that.
How did you feel with that?
I felt great.
So,
I mean, I wasn't aware of passing gallstones or anything like that, but I definitely felt cleaned out. And that's also a liver cleanse. You know, and you're drinking warm salt water in the morning, so you're flushing your whole system out. And I guess for me, the concept of giving your organs a rest, you know, and letting them just rest because we push them so much with all that we eat. Just that concept alone just made sense to me.
That's true. Yeah. What else are you going to say?
I was going to just say, you know, in anthroposophical medicine, you know, they talk about also, you know, or Rudolf Steiner talked about getting protein from vegetables and how because it's not so readily available, you know, the amount of protein that's in vegetables is so minute that your organs have to work so much harder to actually excrete the protein out of the vegetables, and it's like exercising your organs. So he was just saying how great it was to get your protein from vegetables and think of it as exercising your organs, whereas when you eat heavy animal products, your body gets the protein so easily that your organs can become very sluggish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I going back to like resting, you know, the organs and stuff. So, you know, we kind of talked of, or we haven't maybe talked about food as medicine, and you know, there's the Institute, the Hippocrates Institute, and this idea of like, so I feel like that you can give your organs a rest based on the timeline of your eating for the day. And
mm-hmm.
so I feel like you can still eat and cleanse and rest the organs. And so there's this idea of like cleansing through food, and like, so when you do go on a cleanse, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not eating, you're just like taking out certain things. So intermittently, I do think that cleanses, especially when they have a specific purpose, like you mentioned, like the Master Cleanse is a liver cleanse. I think that sometimes people get disillusioned with all these juice places marketing cleanses that have no scientific basis. And scientific basis, I like to use that term lately, just where it's really been studied that this exact recipe is what will allow for healing. Whereas I think most of these like juicerias like don't really have anything supporting what they're providing. And so I just want, you know, people to be cautious about that, because you don't want to become malnourished, because when you're starving your body, you actually go into stress mode. And then stress can then cause you to become sick.
Uh-huh.
So I just think that it's good to, I think that cleanses are to be done with caution.
Right. And how do you feel about, well, there's superfoods, but then there's also those superfood powders that people are marketed to add to your smoothies to, you know, create a whole meal. What's your thought about that? I'm such a foodie. I really feel like we should get what we need from our food.
I 100% agree. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I always tell patients that, like, get it from the food source first. You know, when people are like, what supplement should I take? And it's like, eat a balanced diet. And then I think if you're looking to add some of these superfoods, like in conjunction to your normal healthy diet, then I think that first of all, knowing the brand, right? So the FDA essentially regulates these supplement companies, or they don't really regulate them. They do have certain guidelines, like you can't say this, you can't say that. But you really want to be sure that whoever you're buying from is a reputable source. And so let's say one that comes to mind is like Garden of Life, for example. Like they're vegan, organic, and you know, they're and I have a friend that's a food scientist out in Los Angeles, and he was like, if I really had to pick, like, you know, he did recommend them. And these powders do allow for certain superfoods that we can't necessarily for example, I'm thinking of the acai berry. It has a very short shelf life. And so in order to get those benefits, like all those antioxidants freeze drying the berry and then putting it into a powder form is probably the only way that someone who's not living near the Amazon could get that superfood. And so in that case, in certain cases where it's just more accessible to get this certain food, like even like maca, like the root from the Andean Mountains, you know, that also, it's like that's not something that we see very often. So in its powdered form, or even like cacao, like the bean, that, you know, it's easiest to use cacao in the powder form. So these types of superfoods in this powder form that you can mix into a smoothie, I agree with. But if you're going to be like, oh, I'm not going to eat this healthy breakfast, or, oh, I'm not going to have a healthy lunch, I'm just going to have a smoothie instead, I don't necessarily subscribe to that. Like, I do like having a superfood smoothie in the morning, but then I also eat regular food as well. So I don't necessarily replace my meal. I just really, you know, because I want some of those extra antioxidant benefits that I wouldn't necessarily be able to get from, like, the produce that I can find in my local grocery store.
Now, but maca powder is relatively new in coming into our food world. Can you share with people what maca powder is?
So it's a root from the Andean Mountains. And so they've done a few studies on it. One study that I thought was really interesting, which I think is the most telling. So the way, the best way to look at studies is when they're able, when they can be most translatable to our everyday lives. And so what they did was they went to this region where people consume maca, and they looked at people who consumed it and didn't. So they weren't like, there was no placebo effect, because they weren't telling people, oh, you're going to take this. And what they did then is they kind of looked at the health of the two groups, and they found that overall health was improved in the groups that eat the maca. And that kind of reminds me back to my medical missions, where it's like the people who are living close to the land, eating their native ways, were the healthiest ones, and the ones that kind of were more modern were unhealthy. And so that was one that really like kind of caught my attention. And then they started doing more. So always what they end up doing too is they end up studying certain things in animals before they study them in humans. And so what they looked at was they a lot, and oftentimes they use rats, and they found that maca is really great for men, especially in terms of virility. So they're looking at it increases testosterone levels, and then even with sperm motility and sperm count. And so, you know, they've yet to do, from what I remember when I looked at it a couple months ago in terms of, you know, the benefits of maca. So I do like to bridge the gap between, you know, I always still like to go back into the science of, you know, to see what studies are done with these alternative modalities. And so, yeah, it does really have some interesting virility. And so I feel like it's another form, and it's a stimulant in a way, but not the way caffeine is. And so, you know, I don't drink caffeine aside from green tea. And so, you know, when I add a superfood smoothie mix, you know, I say that in quotations, and it has maca or cacao in it, I feel like that's a way to also get some energy, but it's natural energy. And so I do think those studies are really interesting. And so do I, and this is where we can use food as medicine. So if we have a male that's like in his 40s or 50s and he's working out, and with age, it's natural that testosterone decreases in men. Exercise, meditation, these are things to help prevent that from happening. But now if there's, you know, this supplement food like maca, and, you know, And these are what some of the studies are showing, it really doesn't have too many, you know, toxicity. You know, if you're eating like the recommended amount, I don't think it would necessarily hurt. And so if it can benefit based on some of these studies we're seeing, it's like, why not, you know, kind of maximize our resources and use food as medicine in this way in terms of prevention, or if you know you may have some kind of, like you're not, what's the word I want to use? Like you're lagging in some area that you want to improve. So maybe it is, you know, testosterone for a man. You know, why not use the resources we have?
Right, right. Well, that's interesting. I know my daughter's, you know, selling a lot of these different powders, and she's brought them into the house, and it's, you know, overwhelming for me because I'm into real food and I don't make those smoothies with all those different powders. And so they kind of sit here and she's like, try them, try them. And, you know, I haven't. Maybe I will.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, and also it's just sometimes it's like refreshing to have like a cold, blend. I don't use ice ever, but sometimes I freeze berries as like, the coolness effect. And so like now that summer's here, like as a refreshing, snack.
Right. Now that summer's here, yes, I'm much more inclined to want to drink a smoothie in the cold weather. But, same with juicing. If I'm juicing, I personally prefer using a juicer as opposed to a Vitamix. I like drinking the juice, not having all the pulp. But anyway, yeah. I'll give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
Before we run out of time, though, I just wanted to touch on, I know we touched on Hippocrates Institute, and you were talking about this liver cleanse using warming foods, cooked foods. What's your feeling on raw foods, which is, the motto of Hippocrates Institute and food is medicine?
Right. So I do think raw foods are really great because anytime we heat foods, there's a chance to denature the protein and the enzymes and the phytochemicals, which are a lot of the benefits that we get from eating plants. And at the same time, eating raw foods allows us to feel satiated longer. It's hydration. The fiber also is more, even though when you cook it, the fiber is still there, it's just, a little more intense when it's raw. And so in terms of giving our organs a workout, raw food eating definitely allows for that. I think there is nothing. And also just to point out in this cleanse, though, it does say that if you normally always eat raw, then it's okay to continue. And so it's one of these things of like our bodies are malleable. And if we are doing something all the time, like our bodies adjust to it. And so in that cleanse, it did say that if you do eat raw, you can continue. So I think raw food is great. I try to eat raw as much as I can. I just also noticed for comfort and like psychology reasons, I do really enjoy warm meals. Like they're just so comforting. And so I myself haven't gone completely raw, but it is something I try to do as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think, I love having a salad at least two of my three meals a day, and a really full one with as much raw food as I can get in it, and making that the bulk of my meal. And then the other stuff, is not the side dish, but goes along with it. I like doing that. So we just have a couple more minutes before we run out of time. Can you just share with people your website and how they could get in touch with you if they want to, and, so that people know how to get you if they need your services?
Yes, thank you. So my website is drnikkinoce.com, drnikkinoce.com. And also I have a Dr. Nikki Facebook page, facebook.com/drnikkinoce. And the best way to contact me is email, and it's drnikki@drnikkinoce.com.
Great. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been so informative.
You.
And maybe we'll do a workshop together.
I would love that. Absolutely.
Nutrition thing, and then I'll follow up with a cooking class.
Yeah, and even if we did some like light yoga before to start it off with a little meditation to unify everyone, I think that could be so wonderful.
Well, we'll work it out, and everyone listening will let you know when it's scheduled for. In the meantime, have a great rest of the week. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.